Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot voice comes in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to ELC. Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're just basking in the warm glow of Father's Day like we are. If you're a father out there, happy Father's Day. Hope it was a good one. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. The patrons are the reason we're here. They make this show possible. Without them, we wouldn't be able to continue. So if you're hearing this and you'd like the show to continue, please consider becoming a patron. You get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, although not this week because Christian's out, but you get lots of other bonus shows to get through the week, including Feeling This with Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talking about the feelings behind video games. Really fascinating shows there. Plus, you get the book club audio versions exclusive to patrons and the Wednesday paid DLC program. We had a fun one this week. Danish Syed joined me. We talked about all kinds of crazy stuff. It's always interesting talking about food. We got into it. We talked about ice cream flavors, ice cream brands, and it's always including the patrons. The patrons get to comment in advance, and we bring that up in the show. Ah, it's all fun and all exclusive to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, what's the show all about? Games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, spelled with 2 N's and 1 T. And I'm usually joined by Christian, but he's off gallivanting with his family. I think they're in the East Coast towns of Maine and Kennebunkport. I don't know. I'm making that up. But he sent some very beautiful pictures of some lighthouses. I'll just put it that way. But he's out, which means I get to play this song.
Who's that coming on the podcast today?
From GameRant.com, it's Anthony Taormina. Hey, Anthony, how are you?
Hey, Jeff, I'm here. It is a holiday. We must be recording on a holiday.
That's right. We got Juneteenth this weekend, and we got Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you. You are a father. Happy Father's Day. Thank you for doing this Father's Day.
Happy
evening.
Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
And hey, we have another guest. And if you're talking fathers, I think we have the perfect guest because DLC this week stands for Dads Who Love Consoles, because we got a Mega Dad from Mega Dads. It's our friend Adam Leonard back with us. Hey, Adam.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me yet again. Thank you for pronouncing my name properly. It's always a treat. It's great to be able to wrap up this Father's Day with you gentlemen talking some games.
Yeah, we got some dads. We got some dads in the wee hours of Father's Day night, just talking some games.
three men in a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Lots to get into this week. It's one of my favorite weeks. I love Steam Next Fest. I'm going to talk about all my Steam Next Fest discoveries this week. We got some interesting news, though, to get to first. So let's start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's also where you can send any correspondence you'd like us to hear. We love hearing from you. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also hang out in our Discord, talk to other folks that listen to the show. It's a good time. And that is 5x5DLC on Discord. Great folks hanging out over there. But Adam, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, Jeff, Anthony, I was a little worried that maybe this week there wouldn't be a terrible story about the state of the video game industry. There's been so many, but then I remembered it's 2026, so there's one literally every single week. Xbox has a plethora of bad news stories following up their amazing showcase. Like, it seemed like Xbox was kind of on a roll, right? They had so many great announcements at Summer Game Fest. They've been doing all sorts of cool promo stuff, Fan Fest. I'm pretty sure they even colored the reflecting pool in DC green to celebrate Xbox. I think that's what that was about.
That's some viral marketing right there. Yeah.
That's yeah. Maybe that was something different.
It's viral something. Yeah.
yes. But man, they really seemed to crap the bed this week, didn't they?
It is remarkable. You know, we've gotten some flack from folks saying, hey, we're a little too hard on Xbox. We got to report what happens. Yeah. It is remarkable to have, like you said, I think some really positive momentum coming out of Summer Games Fest and out of their presentation. A lot of really excellent games they showed off, and some people were, really complimentary, as were we, of the showing that Xbox put together. And then literally can't even wait a week, really, before the
smoke and mirrors.
I guess they timed it.
So if you have not heard yet, the parade of bad news, some of Xbox's most beloved acquisitions are going potentially under the knife. I guess there are ongoing negotiations, at least this is the reporting from Bloomberg, ongoing negotiations for a number of what Xbox would consider underperforming studios. These are Ninja Theory, Compulsion Games, and Double Fine, all three of whom have put out, I think, some really stellar games. Of course, Ninja Theory has the Hellblade games and just announced Senua.
But Jeff, yeah, they just announced a new game. What are we doing?
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second. But yes, we just announced the new Senua game, and it looked really cool. People were talking about how cool it looked, but they are under the knife. Double Fine just put out Kiln. We had Tim Schafer on this very podcast not too long ago. Talking to him was a real pleasure to talk to him. And then, of course, Compulsion Games created South of Midnight last year. I think it was last year. The year before? I think it was last year.
It was last year, yeah.
Yeah.
Won Canadian Game Awards.
Won a Peabody. That game won a Peabody
as well.
Yeah. So award-winning game. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. All three of these developers are in line to be shuttered or spun off into their own independent means or sold, or Microsoft doesn't want them. And this is amidst what is being reported by Bloomberg as a quote unquote bloodbath that is coming, that is set to happen, they say, after June 30th, which will be the end of the fiscal year. And that will be massive layoffs across Xbox. We talked last week about Asha Sharma's email to everyone on staff there at Xbox, talking about how things were unacceptable. This cannot continue. She said it was the exact quote with the 3% profit margin. So this is all an effort to turn things around and cut the fat, I guess, and make the whole endeavor more profitable. But a lot of people are pointing out that many of these studios, among whom the three that are named as being in danger, their mandate previously up to this point had been, hey, just put stuff, give us stuff to put on Game Pass. We want to fill out that Game Pass roster. That's why Double Fine made something like a Kiln. A lot of people are pointing out that's kind of, you know, they basically did what the mandate instructed them to do and are being punished now as the regime changes and the mandate no longer applies, or being punished for the fact that that mandate did not result in sales. A lot of this is kind of, you know, shooting yourself in the foot because your commanding officer told you to point your gun at your foot and pull the trigger. And then just like, well, you shot yourself in the foot. Can't have you on the roster anymore. It's a strained metaphor, but I think it applies.
It works. It works.
Adam.
Yeah.
What do you make of all this?
It's just gross on so many levels, and it's not exclusive to Xbox. Hearing you talk about the mandate from up high really calls to mind what PlayStation did with their everything's got to be service, everything's got to be live service, and then they just shuttered studios that were doing live service stuff that didn't pan out. It seems like these two commanding pillars of the video game industry are just being so incredibly reactive, right? They're trend chasing, they're looking for the next thing, and it's not working out. All of this, you know, with Xbox, really, it's hard to not look at this through the lens of the huge arms race that Xbox and PlayStation were under, trying to gobble up as many studios as they could. And really, what did they get out of it, right? It's an already stable industry that seems to just be in so much worse of a position now because of what PlayStation and Xbox were doing in that regard.
Yeah, the consolidation, as it was happening, it was like, well, is this a good idea? I think it's pretty clear now. Terrible idea. Yeah. And, all of these companies that they, you know, acquired and, as you said, gobbled up, now they're getting indigestion from all the gobbling, and it turns out it's not as profitable as we thought. We're focusing on, you know, Halos and Gears of Warses and Calls of Duty, and that's about it. And all this other stuff has to be trimmed. It's frustrating. Anthony, you brought up the fact that the third Hellblade game was announced shown footage. Looks like it's pretty far along in development. Reporting this week that entire presentation was put together after the powers that be at Xbox already knew that Ninja Theory was under the axe, and that it was sort of a callous effort to increase the asking price if somebody else wanted to acquire it, or, you know, kind of spinning it off in its own thing. If their outside investors wanted to come in and kind of juice the interest in a Ninja Theory that they no longer wanted. What do you make of that?
I mean, that feels, it feels pretty gross. I think all of it is very weird. I think the fact that, you know, most of us are just sort of operating on the fact that this is real, but Xbox hasn't like officially acknowledged any of this. So we're sort of waiting and making assumptions based on Bloomberg's reporting, which I believe is accurate. But I think the concerning part is like, what if there are more studios that are in trouble than just what has been found out? But yeah, there, I mean, the whole Senua situation of saying, well, you're going to announce a new game, but you're also in trouble, and we're only allowing you to do this so that you can show to other potential suitors that you have something going. But then what does that mean for like Compulsion and Double Fine? Like, it, they didn't get any, like, why couldn't you have said, here's what they're working on? What, you know, are you just like sending them out to die? Cause they're not doing nothing. They're not just sitting on their hands. So why didn't they get an opportunity to at least like reveal a concept or a general idea? It just seems weird. It also makes you worried about every other game that just hasn't released, you know, like In Exile and Clockwork Revolution? Like, is that game just going to come out and then that studio's in trouble? Like, what are we, what are we doing here? What's the plan? And then the larger concern is just Asha Sharma winning the over the kind of Xbox diehards with smoke and mirrors, basically, like I alluded to, and then being like, no. Here's what I really came in to do, is to just wipe the Phil Spencer slate clean, eliminate everything that he had basically done. And by the time I'm done with my work, you're going to barely recognize Xbox.
Yeah, it is. It's baffling. And I mean, these are extreme moves and clearly extreme times over at Xbox as far as what they perceive to be an existential crisis for their brand. I don't necessarily think losing what are, I think, really interesting developers making really interesting products is the right way to go. And I'm not super excited about an Xbox that only cares about their biggest, most hardcore franchises. I like the fact that you can have these smaller, more interesting things. And I think a lot of where this discussion has to go, unfortunately, is this an indictment of Game Pass? You know, a lot of the reporting around this is basically pointing the finger at Game Pass as being a sort of non-sustainable model, and Xbox being slow to realize that and forcing all these studios to create content for Game Pass. And then because Game Pass sort of cannibalizes sales, pointing at poor sales and going, well, you didn't sell enough for us to keep you around. It's like, well, that wasn't the mandate. The mandate was to create stuff for Game Pass.
Yeah. And wouldn't you say that Game Pass kept Xbox relevant in a time when it would like, I mean, they bought all these studios and it was kind of like, you buy all these studios, you're waiting for them to make games. And in the interim, you have Game Pass and you have a reason for people to be purchasing Xbox stuff. And now we're starting to like see, over the last few years, this is the fruit of all of those acquisitions. And now they're saying, that fruit is bad.
It's weird because up until Game Pass, we'd always like measured the success of games kind of like, you know, box office, you know, it's how many units were sold. And I always thought, you know, I'm just a 40-year-old chubby dad in Minnesota. I don't understand how do you metric success in Game Pass. It was always like, it's not the sales, it's how many people are engaged, it's how many downloads, it's things like that. And I always thought that was kind of weird, right? I always looked at it and didn't really understand how you could calculate success, but now it seems that it wasn't really success at all.
Well, I think the core problem here is that Game Pass subscriptions have plateaued. I think everything would have been all hunky-dory if they'd still shown growth in the uptake of Game Pass subscriptions. But what happened was those sort of started leveling off. And then to compensate, they raised the price of Game Pass, which pushed more people off the service.
Yep.
So it was kind of counterproductive because you're, you know, paying Peter to, what is it, stealing from Peter to pay Paul? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's
that idea that you're, you know, you're squeezing more money out of the people you have, which is squeezing people out of the people you have. And it's a zero sum game. And, you know, I'm not an economist. I don't run a video game platform holder or a mega $1 billion corporation. So I, you know, my insight here is limited, but it does feel like the sort of layman dumb question that I have is, if Netflix can make it work, why can't a video game company? You know, I understand the proposition of making video games is more complicated in a lot of ways than making movies, but I think the economics aren't that different, right? Video games cost $200 million. So does a movie starring The Rock and, you know, whoever else, Gal Gadot. Yeah.
I think there is an element of maybe, you know, in a few years, because Netflix never officially, they're always like, you know, a billion watch hours. And everyone's like, but did you make money on that Rock, Ryan Reynolds, Gal Gadot movie? And, you know, things like that. So maybe they're just hiding things behind other stuff. But yeah, it is weird
that
they, but I think one of the interesting things to consider is that if you are looking at multi-platform, it seems like during this generation, most people are favoring PlayStation. So Xbox needed to find a way to stand out. And so having more games, diverse games, having Game Pass was their opportunity. So if they're basically saying, no, we're not going to do that, then what do they have? What is, like, are we just getting Gears?
Halo, Gears, Forza, yeah. Call of Duty. Yeah, but then, that's what they have.
You know, because, like, when you look at Sony, Sony only releases a few games each year. You know, we have Wolverine this year and Intergalactic probably the next year. But in between, most of, like, your Resident Evils and even your Grand Theft Autos are going to be purchased, I think, by and large, on PlayStation more so than Xbox. So they have that advantage versus Xbox. Their advantage was Game Pass and having these unique artistic games that maybe weren't like huge blockbusters or, you know, weren't perfect 10 out of 10s, but were artistic, offered something you didn't expect, and were showing that there is an element of video games that is beyond just like shooty whiz bang stuff.
Yeah, and that's what I thought with the beauty of Game Pass is that it was this larger tapestry. It was this, you know, I probably wouldn't buy, you know, the new 8-episode series on Netflix. I wouldn't buy it if it was on iTunes, but I'm paying for Netflix anyway. I'm going to check out that 8-episode cool series starring somebody I've never heard of. And I think that's the kind of thing that Game Pass engendered. And as an end user who, yes, cares about the health and employment of the developers making the games, but as the end user who cares about my wallet, I really like Game Pass. I like the fact that I can get a subscription to a whole bunch of games and have the, you know, day and date big releases alongside smaller releases. It was a great deal, and it's a great opportunity for discovery of cool games. And it's going to bum me out if it goes away. And I understand, you know, that may just be the economic reality of allowing these developers to stay in business. And I want them to stay in business. I want people to stay employed. But it's not like the people that aren't doing Game Pass aren't laying people off. Yeah. They are also laying people off. So I don't know if it is entirely Game Pass's fault, but it certainly seems like Game Pass set up some of these particular developers to fail in that Microsoft is like, here's what you need to make. And when they made it and it didn't sell well, now they're like, well, we're going to shutter you. And that absolutely sucks.
Absolutely.
Kotaku put a little timeline together of the Xbox stuff recently. I thought I'd read it because I think it's interesting. Here's what they wrote. A new CEO after previous leadership was beheaded. A rebrand that was kind of just the old brand. A reaffirmation of the expensive Helix upcoming console. A claim that hardware can't be expensive if they want to win. A claim that the 30% profit margin no longer is important. A claim that the 3% profit margin is trouble. Matthew Ball and some new high-tech industry hires. A claim about refocusing on core franchises. A showcase of new games. A killing of the studios making those new games. A claim that gaming is important to Microsoft. A comment that gaming at Microsoft needs to stand alone. So it's just, you put it all together like that. You put it in a big list like that,
yeah.
And it's hard not to see the whiplash that is inherent in the messaging. And that's just like the last month or two, you know, it's not that much time. All that has happened.
You know, I take back my earlier statement. I am really smart. When I hear you spell it out like that, I think I am actually pretty smart.
It is. It's a bummer. I love Xbox. I'm rooting for it. It does seem, Anthony, like what you're saying is true, that they intend, or at least the thrust of what this new direction that Asha Sharma is pointing the brand in is about just standing toe to toe with Nintendo and Sony on the big exclusives again, that it's going to be like a throwback to the old days where it's like, well, we are putting, we've got our $300 million franchise against your $300 million franchise game. And you, the consumer, has to pick, and we hope you pick us because we're stacking the deck with our big, huge, monolithic franchises.
Yeah, but that's not going to work. We all know that's not going to work. We all know, like, I mean, they're going to see how well Halo is going to sell on PlayStation and go, oh, this was, you know, it just, it almost feels like they kicked Phil out, brought in Asha Sharma to be the bad guy, to come in and make these hard decisions and like play around and, you know, like move meters up and down and then turn to the audience and go, is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? And then eventually they're just going to go back to where they started and say like, well, no, we're not going to be able to survive if we don't put our games on other platforms. It just doesn't work for us. Sony can do it because Sony is, you know, you can't look at what the other guy is doing and just copy what they're doing because
exactly
they tried that and it didn't work. You know, they found, I think, a formula that at least made them appealing. And then now they're saying, ah, never mind. And it's just like, Gears is going to come out and sell well, but who knows how well Fable's going to sell? And then that's a question of moving forward. What do you do? Like, what's your plan? Because pretending like consoles, you know, they can't be super expensive. Well, we're all seeing the writing on the wall. These consoles seem like they're going to be very expensive.
Yeah.
So what are you saying? What are you trying to tell? Are you trying to tell us lies and then come around and go, no, it is $1,000.
Oh, it's going to be north of $1,000.
Yeah. So it's I just kind of like pretending like it isn't going to be $1,000 so that the Xbox, you know, at Xbox, whatever on Twitter can be like, see, she knows what we want. And then when it's $1,000, they're going to make, you know, TikTok videos of them going, she lied to us. And Xbox is going to be back there going, see, we threw her out there and she got crucified for it. And now we move on and we go back to how we were. Look, Phil's back.
Adam, do you have any silver lining about this? I mean, maybe there's no silver lining to be had. Of course, there's, you know, we haven't seen this bloodbath that is rumored to happen in the next week or two. And hopefully that is overblown. Hopefully, you know, we never want to see human beings lose their jobs. And it sounds like there's going to be a lot of human beings losing their jobs upcoming. So, I mean, setting that aside, as little as we want to set that aside, because that is really the most important part, are the humans. But setting that aside for the moment, is there a way out? Is there a way up for Xbox? Do you see any of these moves as being potentially a way to recapture some of that Xbox 360 era glory?
You know, it's funny because I started talking about, you know, how reactive it all seems. And because that pendulum has swung back and forth, it seems so many times, it just feels like they're flailing and grasping for steady ground. I admittedly don't have much of a dog in this fight as a consumer because I have not invested in this generation of Xbox. A big part of that has been the messaging and the branding just is so confusing and frustrating as a consumer. But to me, my biggest thing is that human element. Like, I listened to your episode with Tim Schafer, and he's such a great guy. And there are so many great people that love what they do and have so much heart and passion for it. And they're just getting played with, right? They're just getting screwed. And this, it's just not sustainable. Again, above and beyond Xbox, the industry as a whole is just hurting so bad. And to see this massive of a scale of a shakeup, right? Like, this is going to be just tremendously awful.
Yeah. Yep. I'm sure it will not be the last time we talk about this. Cause, as the reporting indicates, you know, the worst is coming. So, hopefully it won't be as bad as all that. Hopefully these negotiations, as they've termed them, find a way forward for some of these studios. You know, I have a lot of affection for these studios, and there's people who are very passionate about what they do, as you said, working there. And man, it's just hard. And this is why people hate consolidation. It's why all these companies getting gobbled up. Turns out to be bad because the big company doesn't care much. You know, they have to make those tough decisions, and all too frequently, it's not the people at the top that lose the jobs. It's all the other people. Frustrating. Anyway, big news that we'll continue to cover. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more stories of the week right after this. All right. Well, Anthony, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week is Grand Theft Auto 6 box art reveal and pre-order date.
It's really happening. We think
it couldn't be more real than it is real right now.
Yeah, that's right. They won't delay it now. We've seen the box. We know what the box looks like.
Technically, we haven't seen the box. We've seen the digital representation of the box that's going to be on the storefronts of the things. But
what is a box?
Yeah, I mean,
we have the concept of a box.
I couldn't tell you the last time I bought a box.
Potentially by the time you are listening to this, ladies and gentlemen, you may be able to put in your pre-order for Grand Theft Auto 6, which is starting June 25th. Select retailers and digital storefronts will let you pre-order Grand Theft Auto 6. I suspect this will set new records for pre-orders, but we shall see. Anthony, what did you make of the box art?
I mean, it looks like a Grand Theft Auto box art would look.
Yeah, they are consistent.
They are consistent. I'm not of the like, ooh, you know, like it means we're going to drive boats. It means we're going to drive cars type of person, you know, but I understand like hype is hype.
You're going to drive alligators, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I hope I get to punch an alligator. I hope I get to, you know, find a body inside an alligator that has a key card to a thing. And, you know, Rockstar, call me. I can write some quests for you. But yeah, I mean, I think the really interesting thing about the pre-orders is just when those pre-orders go live, we will know what the price is of Grand Theft Auto 6.
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing is that they announced this, they put the box art image out, they put out a little image of like the city from at night, like from the sky on their official, you know, socials. They put out the date that you'll be able to pre-order. No word of the price yet. Which is a little scary. You think it's 80?
I think it's 80. There was like some, you know, leaks and whatnot, but they are going to be the one that is going to, you know, whatever, break the levy, whatever you want to metaphor you want to use. Like they are going to set it, and then everyone else is going to go. Everyone's gonna steal from the Pauls with their $80, and then everyone else is gonna come back and go, "Hey, Paul, you also want to pay $80 for Call of Duty?"
Yeah,
Because I think that's just gonna set the thing. And I do think that there are going to be games where they are gonna be overzealous and say we can get away with $80, and the market's gonna say, "Oh no, you can't." But I think there's going to be plenty of games like your Final Fantasy VII Rebirths and your, you know, Kingdom Hearts 4 and what Call of Duties, of course, being able to say, yeah, this game is now $80. And people are going to say, well, I paid that much for Grand Theft Auto, so I guess that's just what I'm paying from here on out, and maybe buy less games. But yeah, I think that that's the interesting thing about this is they are going to potentially set the shift of game prices moving forward. A few days or by the time you've listened.
It's such a bummer. It's such a double-edged sword, right? Because on the one hand, they're the one game that can do it because people will pay whatever it takes for this. But on the other hand, they're also the one game that doesn't need to do it because at any price point, they're going to make so much money that squeezing out an extra $10 per sale isn't going to be the difference between, you know, being solvent and not solvent. This game is going to make, you know, the GDP of mid-sized countries. And
oh yeah.
So they don't need to, they don't need to do that. They don't need to push the price higher to still make gobs of money, but they're also the one game that can, and it just stinks that it sounds like they probably will.
I do know that there are going to be people out there who are going to say, but Anthony, you know, Mario Kart World was $80. True. Nintendo operates on their own thing. Nobody imitates Nintendo. This is going to be a thing. It's going to be, they're going to set it and people are going to copy it. And it's a bummer that we're bracing for this, but I mean, with the way things are looking, somebody was going to do it. Even if Grand Theft Auto comes out and says, no, it's a $70 product, Call of Duty or something else is going to say, we gotta try $80 and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's true. Adam, do you concur? Do you think, are you guessing the price is going to be $80?
$39.99.
No.
I'll do Tree Fitty.
Wouldn't that be extraordinary if they're like, it's $35.
Actually, DLC for Grand Theft Auto 5, and it's available now. It's probably going to be a crap ton of money. I am so mad about this game because it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. Looking at that box art, it looks like there's flamingos, so that's cool. The last time a Grand Theft Auto game came out, I was a kid, and now I have two kids. I don't know how I'm possibly going to play this game.
I know. I'm so worried. I'm so worried about like the other kids at school that are going to have this game.
Ugh, yeah.
I don't know
in what reality I can feasibly own this product in my house. And that makes me sad because I love Grand Theft Auto. And this is super exciting. That trailer that they had with the Tom Petty music was just, it got me so excited. And then like immediately when it was over, I just got really sad because it's going to be expensive and naughty.
I think the box art is pretty cool, though. I gotta say,
it is.
It's a bummer that the they have the widescreen version, and then they have the portrait version. And the one thing you lose in the portrait version is the alligator. It's a bit of a bummer.
R.I.P. alligator. I think the real bummer in all this is that we're not gonna. Well, assuming that they can use the technology, we're not gonna have those like classic Grand Theft Auto like loading screens anymore. That were like type of artistic style that you saw in the box.
Well, you don't know.
The ones where you're like, okay, here's a dude riding a motorcycle, and then your mom walks in, you're like, oh, this lady, turn off.
Oh man, the whole culture is gonna be just this game. I'm just not looking forward to how the world will receive.
It's our turn, Jeff. It's our turn.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a lot of conversation in our Megadads community about like the state of the world right now. Do we want to laugh at it? Like that's kind of what Grand Theft Auto does. Is it skewers the state of the world in certain eras. And like there are people in our Discord who are genuinely like, I don't know if I actually can find something to laugh about. Because you know, inevitably there's going to be some mission in Grand Theft Auto 6 where you're going to some sort of representation of Mar-a-Lago or something like that, right? And like,
oh yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
There's a big part of my community, at least, that is just not prepared for that.
I'm not prepared for it. I'm not going to let my kid play it, but I think everyone at his school's gonna. There's going to be parents that are just letting their kids play it.
Yeah,
and I'm going to hear about it, I'm sure, and he's gonna know about it, and I just don't like.
I think that's fair, but also like when we were kids, we had the friends, or you were the person.
Yeah,
I was the kid. Unfortunately,
it was you.
It was me. It was about. Me that was like I saw Saving Private Ryan in the theaters. You guys.
Yeah,
you're so cool.
It sounds like it's really happening though. Really is coming.
Oh yeah,
out in November.
It's for real. Well, they could still delay it. They could do the pre-orders, and they're like, we don't like these numbers. We're going to delay it unless you get these numbers a little higher.
I think the pre-orders are going to crush.
Oh, for sure.
It's going to be obscene. Anyway, that's the – if you haven't seen it, folks, I guess I should have described it. This is an audio medium. But if you haven't seen the box art, it's pretty cool. I think it's got that classic – Grand Theft Auto look to it, where it's the different little windowed vignette little scenes, and you got a cool power boat, you got a sick race car. You got a dude with a machine gun. You got a sexy lady. You got a guy with gold chains. You got a dude doing a wheelie on a motorcycle. You got a helicopter. And then you got our two little leads there at the top.
The flamingo and the alligator?
No, oh, can you imagine? Oh, boy.
I'd play that game. Yeah. I'd play that game.
You're also going to play this game.
I'm going to play this game. You're right. I am going to play this game. I'm probably going to pre-order this game on the 25th like a chump. But, I, you know, what are you going to do? All right. My story of the week is more depressing news. And that is that Epic has released more information about the upcoming Unreal Engine 6, the next version of the popular video game engine we all know. This one is going to have lots of AI stuff in it, generative AI. It's going to be chock-a-block with generative AI. The quote is, for UE6, we see LLMs, generative AI models, and tools like Claude and Codex playing a central role in helping you build content faster while maintaining the creative control you need. This big part of our effort is going to be exposing a broad set of engine capabilities through MCP protocol so that developers can mix and match the best leading edge models and build custom integrations of all sorts on an open Unreal Engine 6 foundation. So basically, what they're touting is that the Unreal Engine Fortnite editor is going to be built into Unreal Engine 6. So you're going to have that. And then there's going to be also lots of this generative AI stuff. Rocket League, they're already showing off. Rocket League has been remade from the ground up on Unreal Engine 6. That version is coming, I think, in the fall. We don't know. We don't have a release date for Unreal Engine 6 yet, but it's got lots of AIs in it. Adam, what do you think? Is this just inevitable? Or, you know, go ahead. I'll let you talk before I posit my feelings.
I'm going to miss people when they're gone.
Are you? I don't know.
I mean, maybe I won't even notice.
Won't you also be gone, though? Why are you? Yeah, that's very presumptuous that you're going to start a robot apocalypse. What's this about?
Maybe none of this is happening.
Adam has been befriending robots for years in anticipation of this very moment.
I am so, I mean, not to make this personal, but I am so sick of all of this crap. I am an artist, a graphic designer by trade. This is just sickeningly pervasive in my professional life, in my side gigs. It's had a massive impact on me personally. So to see it just barf its way all over the gaming industry infuriates me. We saw quite a bit of this in Summer Game Fest, a lot of floofy AI talk from, you know, the developers behind the new Tomb Raider remake, all sorts of stuff. Everybody's using it. It's there. It's not gonna go anywhere. I honestly am so this frustrates me so much more than the Xbox stuff, just personally, because I have such a personal stake in what AI is doing to people, to artists, to creators. It makes me so damn mad, and I don't like any of it.
Yeah, and it you know, Epic is unabashed in their embracing of it, and I got to say, I don't know if correlation is causation in this particular case, but I got to say, I started the show talking about how much I love Steam Next Fest, and we'll get to that shortly. I do love Steam Next Fest, but this go-round was the first time I felt like, man, I'm really wading through a lot of bad stuff, way more bad. It used to be like, I can't handle how many great games are coming out. It's just like banger after banger. And this time I felt like the ratio of the number of demos I had to download to get to one that I really loved. And again, I don't know if that has anything to do with this, has anything to do with AI or vibe coding or any of the ways that it's easier to make video games now. I don't know. Correlation is not causation. I don't have any hard data, but it does feel weird that it just feels like there's more garbage. And I think even if it's not the case now, I think that's what Unreal Engine 6 with all of this stuff, you know, ratcheted onto it will create. Like, it will allow people to create. And I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to think that people will just, you know, vomit out a bunch of easy to make kind of soulless crap, but certainly will make it easy to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anthony, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I worry about that. I worry about them saying like, oh, you know, the Fortnite editor, because I do think that there obviously are artistic elements you see in different games, but I do think that there is kind of a look to Unreal Engine 5 games, and I worry that we're going to get like more homogenized. You know, you always see like a Resident Evil game running on the RE engine, and you're like, man, this just, it has a look to it. And then when other games are on it, you're like, okay, it's on the RE engine, but those are so few and far between. Unreal Engine, it's like you can kind of see some of that.
Yeah.
Here's my one wish for Unreal Engine 6, because Unreal Engine 5 has that awful stutter problem that drives me up the wall. So if they can just fix that with Unreal Engine 6, I will take the good with the bad. You know, like that for me is like, it just drives me insane. Cause like when you're playing a game and you just like those micro stutters and you're like, Unreal Engine, why? And people are like, oh, DLSS fixes it and this fixes it, and it doesn't. So if we can just like fix that in Unreal Engine 6 and then like people just ignore the AI, awesome. But if you're going to give me AI plus, we're going to continue micro stuttering, it's over.
I think we found the way that Anthony will support the robot uprising. Get rid of the stutter and I will bow to my new digital overlords.
I already tell Siri thank you when she tells me directions. I say, thank you, Siri. Appreciate it.
That's good.
But the other thing I wanted to mention that I saw coming up is that Unreal Engine 6 is doing away with, now I'm not a dev, I don't know the ins and outs, but like it's a concept called blueprints, and it is what the Clair Obscur developers were able to use within Unreal Engine 5 to make Clair Obscur. And it's apparently going away. Hmm. So a lot of people were concerned that like this will prevent, you know, those upstart developers from being able to like cobble things together in the same way they could in Unreal Engine 5. And I mean, for me, Clair Obscur, you know, Jeff and I, we love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So saying like, oh, something that was instrumental in allowing one of the best games of this generation to be made now won't be possible on Unreal Engine 6 is disappointing, but I think that's like a small piece of it. And maybe they'll, you know, hear the outcries and change things, but it really is the AI element. I worry that slop is coming in greater numbers, but it also feels like it's already here. So
yeah. Yeah. Good times. Always a good time in the news segment. It used to be real fun doing news to start the show every week.
Remember time we were talking about the box art for Grand Theft Auto 6?
Box art with alligators? Oh, the time we had.
All right. Well, you have to talk about a box to feel happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Remember boxes, guys? Remember boxes? All right. Well, we do have games to talk about. I am excited to talk about games. So let's do it. Let's take another quick break for a sponsor. We'll be back to get into our playlist right after this. All right. Let's do it. Let's talk about the games that we've been playing in a segment we call the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Adam Leonard, what has been on your playlist this week?
I am going to take just a little bit of time because I know that these games have been talked to death, but I did recently finish 007 First Light, and I found it to be just so good, so phenomenal. I was a guy who had never played a Hitman game, so I thought, you know, this is a great opportunity for me to kind of wade into what those games are going to kind of like known for, in the wrappings of also like an Uncharted-like, which is my bread and butter. That's the kind of thing that I really love. And man, IOI just killed it. They absolutely nailed that James Bond feel. They did it in such a way that when the credits for this thing rolled, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of good for a little while. They can pause on that James Bond movie. Take your time. Because this gave me everything that I wanted from a James Bond adventure. It played really well. It looked unbelievable. Made me feel smart. That's always a good thing. I like when games make me feel smart. This thing is for sure making a play for my Game of the Year shortlist. 007 First Light was just outstanding.
Yeah, it's real good and real pretty and nails the Bond thing. I mean, I know it's no great surprise these days that a licensed character game can be excellent. We're long past the days when that wasn't the case, but mm-hmm. it still blows me away when you can have a video game be better than some of the movie installments of a character, and that you know was born in the cinema. That's pretty cool, and I think we're that's becoming the norm now. Like some of these Spider-Man games are better than Spider-Man movies, and now we get a James Bond that's better than some James Bond movies. Things are bad in a lot of ways in this industry, but the actual content has never been better. Anthony, I'm assuming you played 007 First Light as well. I haven't heard what you thought of it.
I really enjoyed it. I think it does combine those elements of Hitman and then give you that bombastic action that you know from the Uncharted games, like Adam was mentioning. I think that the kind of construction of the tutorial section is hopefully sets like a new standard for how to like do one of those. And like, it's just so clever in terms of how it like incorporates Bond lore and like pushes Bond forward at the same time, like acknowledging like everything that exists in our mind from that. I really, really enjoyed the game.
Without spoiling anything at all, there is a moment towards the end of the game in the Q lab that just made my brain explode. So if a person hasn't gotten to that point, my God, you owe it to yourself. If you're a Bond fan, play to the end of this game. It is so good.
Does it make you want to play any of those Hitman games now, Adam?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I know I've heard a lot of takes that like this is kind of like baby's first Hitman, right? Mm-hmm. It's a smaller contained area.
It's more directed than Hitman tends to be. Yeah.
Yeah. It really made you feel like there was never a point where I was like, okay, I know there's multiple options, but I have no idea what to do. So it absolutely makes me want to wade into a kind of like a meatier one of those. So I absolutely will be checking out the Hitman games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're good fun. It's basically, a character with absolutely no personality. And what I like about the Bond games, or this Bond game, is that you get to be Hitman, but you also get to have a bit of a personality, which is fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those Hitman games are good. What else is on your playlist, Adam?
So the other game that I was going to talk about, and I was really excited, I got a code from my PR firm for the new Dave the Diver in the Jungle DLC.
Nice.
And being a small-time creator, I don't always have time to finish the games that I am provided. Such was the case with the original Dave the Diver. I played a good deal of it, never finished it. I got this in the jungle content, popped it open and said, hey, you got to beat Dave the Diver.
rough when you're, you're like, oh, okay, so I'm going back.
Crap. So I found myself playing a lot of Dave the Diver this weekend, and it's an older game. Everybody's probably played it, but I just continue to be blown away by how much game there is in this game.
Yeah.
Dave the Diver is just packed to the gills with content and mechanics. And you think you're just fishing, and all of a sudden you're farming, and all of a sudden you're running a restaurant, and all of a sudden you're running errands for mermaids. And it's so good and so timeless, which probably has a lot to do with just like the aesthetic of it all. It really has got that throwback look to it, but it's good. And I will finish it this time, I promise, so that I can play that in the jungle content, because that looks really cool.
Yeah. Is that the one that has the Godzilla in it, or is that already the Godzilla already? I haven't played Dave the Diver in a minute. I played it when it launched, and I haven't played any of the DLC.
It's funny because I reinstalled the game and it's like, oh, by the way, there's Godzilla and there's like Yakuza content. There's like four or five different edition packs. So I might be playing this until I retire. But yeah, there's a lot of game in Dave the Diver, man. There's so much there to like.
It's good. I really, really enjoyed my time with it too. I did not finish it either, but it's good fun. And you're right. The aesthetic is so great. It's kind of looks like the old Full Throttle game, you know, or something like that. It's so charming, and the characters are all so interesting and goofy and fun. Real gem. And it's cool that they're continuing to put out stuff for it.
Mm-hmm.
I do like when a game has DLC that requires you to finish it, where it is like, or would you like to push this button and have it have finished it?
Yeah.
Some games will do that. And I'm like, I appreciate that.
I just bought
this all shiny new content I want to try.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's Dave the Diver in the Jungle on Adam's playlist. Anthony Taormina. Oh my gosh. I've been meaning to talk to you. We haven't spoken since the death of your what we used to bring you on for this franchise, for this very game, to get your expert opinion, because you were our Destiny guy.
Yeah.
Now Destiny 2 has been put out to pasture to wander the planets lonely with the whatever gun you had last, you know?
Yeah. So they put out the final update, which added, it was kind of like a, hey guys, we're just whatever. Like we'll put some stuff together. And so Sparrow Racing League is in it. They had this kind of like last, hurrah called Pantheon. They've done it previously, but it's like a gauntlet of raid bosses. They've changed up some of the mechanics. So while there were new things to do in this final update, but also like, they said, we want to make you crazy powerful. We're going to try and balance things for PvP. But things started to become super real recently, because there are like some exploits or like some crazy, like you can push bosses off of their platforms. And that was common for Destiny, but then they would nerf them or patch it out. But now it's kind of like they're saying like, here's what we can do. We're going to do what we can, but like, we're not going to be able to patch this game in the same, you know, frequency that we were. And that's when it was like, oh yeah, that's it. Like these guns in a little bit are going to be these guns. This perk is going to be this strong, and this perk is going to be this weak or whatever. And I'm sad. Yeah. I wrote a thing on Game Rant about my time with Destiny, because I don't think there's a single game that I spent more time with. I started playing this game before I was married, before I had a kid, you know, not that the game like helped me through those times or anything, but it was like consistently there. I have friends that I don't really see that often who we would get together to do our weekly stuff, our raids on Tuesdays or whenever we could. And not having that game almost is like, even though we hadn't been regularly playing it, it means that like, okay, now we won't have that opportunity. There won't be another expansion to be like, we play in this one, we do in this raid. So it's really sad to just kind of be done with a game I like so much. I know that there is that groundswell movement to try and get Destiny 3. I don't think it's happening. I worry about just what Bungie is going to look like in a little bit. I assume that Marathon is just going to deliver on whatever it needs to deliver on in terms of like the agreement with Sony or the agreement with players, but I don't see that continuing. And then I don't know what happens.
Yeah, it's wild. That's another one of those crazy acquisitions that just didn't pan out the way the acquirer thought it would. And, the fact that they are sunsetting Destiny 2 without having another thing other than Marathon to turn to, at least that's what the reporting seems to indicate. It's just crazy. It's crazy to me that they wouldn't have some other project ramping up, but maybe that's happening. Who knows? But it feels like even if there was a Destiny 3, it's years and years away.
Yeah, I mean, I think they bet on Marathon. You know, obviously you're kind of speculating or reading between the lines, but it does feel like they basically said, I think Marathon is the thing, and you could just see like, oh man, they're siphoning resources. All the PvP people, like PvP was just dying in Destiny 2, and it felt like, okay, well, that's because Marathon people are working on it. And when Destiny was at its best, or Destiny 2 was at its best, there were multiple studios available. It's, in my opinion, it was like they had the backing of Activision, and they were using all these other studios to help like fill out the calendar, and when they were doing things all themselves, it really made it very challenging. And I think if Sony had said, like, let's look at how Activision did things and maybe try and like, you know, boost the content or done something to like make it feel more fleshed out, but really it just got like fewer expansions, less raids, the content was thinner, and it just like, it was, you knew things weren't going to be good. But then when they came out and were like, look, it, things aren't just not good, things are bad.
Yeah.
So I know, it was like, oh, well, but I played the new update. Me and a buddy, we've kind of like said, let's get together and like have our last hurrahs, but it is, it's sad times.
It did have a good long run. That's for sure.
Oh, of course. But, yeah. I'm so glad. Like, it will forever be. When people say, like, what are your top games of all time? Destiny and Destiny 2. I'll just combine them, but Destiny will 100% yeah. be there. Just like, you know, people say World of Warcraft.
Right. Yeah. All right. What else is on your playlist?
Well, so, yeah, I wasn't able to participate in our usual Summer Game Fest. I didn't attend Summer Game Fest this year, but I did do like a pre-Summer Game Fest thing, and I played Control Resonant, about 3 hours of Control Resonant.
Ooh, and what did you think?
It's really fun. Character action games are more my jam, as any listener knows, than the shooties. I do enjoy them. But yeah, so I think that this is more up my alley than Control was, even though I really enjoyed Control. I kind of liken this game a little bit to Prototype. It's kind of like got that like, you know, weird, visceral, like these enemies are this like just artistically gruesome, weird distortions of reality, which man,
I haven't thought about that game in a long time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely gave me some Prototype vibes. It's not as, or at least what I played wasn't like totally open world. They did kind of like section us off in the demo to make sure that we couldn't explore the kind of open-ended areas as much as you can in the final game.
Uh-huh.
Really cool boss fight with this like giant head. When I talked to the developers, they said that in Control, we didn't really know what to do about boss fights. So we kind of put them to the side and put them in side quests. And they were like, here, we know what we want to do. So they're like front and center. And it definitely feels like boss fights have, or at least the boss fight that I experienced was really, the boss itself was just this cool design. The mechanics and the like evolution or progression of what you're doing in that boss fight was really fun, and it incorporated the traversal because you can kind of hover and dash similar to how you could as Jesse. And now you're playing as her brother, Dylan. Jesse's still present. So like, even if you were the type of person that said, oh man, I don't want to leave Jesse behind, you still are. It feels like, even though Dylan was in a coma and he wakes up and Jesse, you're like, I don't know where she is. It is kind of filling in what she had been doing, maybe building to a game where you play as both or something like that. Who knows? But you're not just like ignoring her as a character. So if you were attached to her story and you want to kind of see how that progresses, I think that this will be part of Control Resonant's story. But just this idea of, instead of Jesse's service weapon, Dylan has, it's called the Aberrant. It changes into different melee forms, like a big old spear or like two kind of like daggers. There's a like charged attacks. There's different like abilities. Like you can pick up rocks from, or like, you know, the environment and turn them into rocks and throw them. You can make a shield to protect you. You can send out a heat wave. There's a lot of like kind of that combo based attack, melee focused combat, and then mixing in little abilities here and there, you charge them up, and it has a super satisfying like finisher move. So anytime you like break the, I guess it's like a stagger meter on the enemies, you will like, it's almost as if Dylan's being pulled by his belly button and he just like zooms to the enemy. But you know how like the hiss would move around like that? Like they were just moving around really weird. It's almost like you get pulled by your belly button over to them and then do like a really flashy finishing move. It's super satisfying. And it looks scary, but also awesome. it's still Control. Like the level designs are really cool. It has that like Inception, New York is folding in on itself. We were able to play a level that was like kind of like I guess you would call it like a hotel floor, but the like ceiling is cut off so you can like jump over the walls, but then the walls go up. So like you can be on the floor, kind of like Inception. You could be on the floor and then walk on the wall and walk on the ceiling and play with the different perspectives and what's gravity. There's some really cool stuff. I have video footage of it on GameRant.com from my preview if you want to see some of the stuff I'm talking about. But it's really fun and has deep RPG stuff where you're kind of picking what skill tree moves you want to do, how you want to spec out your version of Dylan. You can favor different play styles. I think there's a lot going on in the game, way more than Control had. And I had a blast playing it.
Man, I am so excited for this one. It's going to be a crowded September, but Control Resonance certainly is going to be a standout for me to.
It was funny. They announced it. They told us, they're like, we're telling you the release date. And so we hadn't seen any of the stuff like the PlayStation. So they were like, you know, here's our release date. And we're like, cool. And they were like, hopefully there's not any games to conflict with us. And then I was like, oh, guys.
Have terrible news.
there was like another session like the next day. So I can only imagine what the vibe in the clubhouse was after that. Because for us, they were just like, we're excited to tell you the release date. You're going to find it out. La, 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 la. And it was like, oh, so there's a bunch of games all around you. Games. Even like two big games on the same day.
Yeah, well, this one certainly, I mean, I hearing you say how much fun you were having with it, I'm so excited to see them do melee combat in that world and with that style and hearing how satisfying, you know, that's what's so great about the first Control is that it's so satisfying. Everything feels good. They really nailed that. The combat feeling good and I having that, you know, visceral kind of chunky combat with melee.
It's super fun. And yeah, like doing that, like, you know how you would play as Jesse and you would like hover in the air just because you're like, I want to hover in the air. Now you can do that with melee and like dash away. And it's real good. It's real good.
Well, I'm excited. That's going to be fun. Okay. So I got a lot of Steam Next Fest to get to, but let's take a last break. Before I launch into my list, we'll be right back after this. All right. Like I said, I love Steam Next Fest. I love indie games. I love PC games. I love the sort of drinking from the fire hose of just seeing all the stuff that I've never heard of and being able to play it and demo it. Ah, it's the best. I will reiterate that for whatever reason, this particular Steam Next Fest felt like it was harder to find the gems than it has been before. I felt like I was buried in gems the last few Steam Next Fests. It's like, oh my gosh, how do I even narrow this down to talk about the best of the best? This time I feel like I was playing a lot of games that I was like, ooh, pass on that one. For whatever reason, I don't know why that is. I mean, whenever you're a Steam Next Fest, it's something like 9,000 demos or something insane. I don't know if it's 9,000. It's a lot. I heard somewhere that if you played each demo of Steam Next Fest for a half an hour and you never stopped, it would take you 90 days to play all the games in this Steam Next Fest, which is like,
my God,
bonkers. So clearly I've not played all of them, but I'll tell you what, I always give it my best effort to play as many as I possibly can to whittle down to the games that I'm going to bring up on the show. And so here are my favorites of this Steam Next Fest and games that I put on my wish list to keep tabs on. First one I want to talk about is called Echoes of Mistralia. This is a sort of Hades-like where, you know, it's a isometric roguelite where you're as you die, you get more story, you get more, you know, you can go through a run and get these cool story elements, die, get different story elements, very much taking a page from Hades in that narrative element. But it's also like Hades in that it's a very kinetic roguelite, you know, isometric action based combat. But the cool thing about this, first of all, the game looks great. I really love the aesthetic. It's beautiful. The storytelling is beautiful. Like there's these massive like celestial dragons and it's really cool. But also the neat hook for Echoes of Mistralia is that you get to sort of, as you know, in roguelite fashion, you are going from room to room, or sort of like in Hades, where you'd go from room to room and certain rooms would have different icons on them to tell you what, you know, is past that door, what upgrade you're going to get, what cool reward you're going to get for clearing that room, such is the case here. But when you get a new power up, or new aspect of the power, you can sort of build it in this interesting chain fashion. So you can like add effects to your abilities. Like the first weapon, I think there's multiple weapons that will be in the main game, but in the demo, the first weapon you have two actually, but the first one you have is this kind of cool boomerang thing that you throw out and can hit enemies on the way out and the way back. But then you can add all these cool modifiers based on the power-ups that you randomly earn during your run. So I was like leaving a trail of electricity with my boomerang. It was like spawning off little fireballs that would kind of spin off in opposite directions. But I could also apply that in different ways. There was another like chained attack that I had that would made me stand in one place and do it. And so I could apply those power-ups to that weapon instead, or change the order of the chain so that one would happen beforehand. So it would happen the moment I shot it, the boomerang, or it would happen when it reached its apex of the boomerang. It's cool. It really feels like you can form your build in much more interesting ways than just the sort of binary, like this adds, you know, five more damage or this adds an explosion effect. It's like, oh, where in the chain do I want to put that explosion effect? Can I apply it to multiple other things down the chain? Very, very cool game. Beautiful game. One I have my eye on. It's called Echoes of Mistralia.
Looks beautiful. Like you said, the art style is just outstanding.
It is. It's really cool game. And the combat feels good. I was having a blast with this one. The next one I want to talk about is called Ascenders Beyond the Peak. Oh, this game is so cool. What a great concept. It is basically XCOM meets Darkest Dungeon. But the XCOM of it all is applied vertically because you are climbing a mountain. So it's got XCOM like tactical combat, but the tactical combat isn't combat. It's scaling a mountain, but it's turn-based and you've got this team and you're using different tools that you have as climbers. So, you know, I can move one guy, you know, five squares up the mountain and he's tethered to two other people in a, you know, the way the climbers are tethered. And so you can like yank one person up to where you were, or split up your party and try to collect resources that are, you know, there's like berries that are hanging off of a tree on the side of the cliff. So you can send somebody over to get the berries. You can use somebody's pick to hammer through a dead end that breaks the rock, or you can cause an avalanche to happen that'll fall down and break some other thing. But be careful, your guy's in the path. It's going to knock him down. Really, really cool. The Darkest Dungeon element of it is the one I'm less excited about, because I always shy away from those games because those games can be brutal. But it has that like, you know, your team will get these status effects that will affect them long term. They will die. You can even like, there are times that it might even be a good thing to like cut the rope and let someone fall to their death because you know they're more valuable to you not pulling you down than they are, you know, trying to save them. So it could be bleak. It could be dark. It's even got that kind of Darkest Dungeon visual style with like those heavy, dark lines, very 2D looking in a 3D world, cel shaded kind of look. But man, what a clever way to apply that tactical combat, you know, turn-based kind of thing, grid-based thing, by layering it against the wall of a cliff so that you're moving up something instead of out something. Very cool game. It's called Ascenders Beyond the Peak.
I have spent so much time over the last 12 months on mountains in video games.
It really is. Climbing is the new thing.
It's crazy.
It's the new lens flare climbing.
Cairn is my current game of the year. I played Baby Steps not that long ago. Death Stranding 2 has a lot of mountain climbing in it. I played Jusant last year. Dude, yeah. I have spent so much time. And as a person who's afraid of heights, that's good for me. But yeah, this definitely piques my interest for sure.
Oh, it's so cool because it's so much different than those other climbing games, and doing, you know, you're still kind of having that experience of climbing, and it's, you know, man versus nature rather than, you know, violence or, you know, your combat in any, not that I'm against that, but it's cool to see a way of making man versus nature be just as compelling.
Yeah.
So man, I think you'll dig Ascenders Beyond the Peak.
Cool.
The other end of the spectrum is a game called Blood Dungeon. This is from the Nidhogg developer. You may have seen it in some of the Summer Games Fest stuff. It was highlighted. I think Jeff Keighley's thing highlighted Blood Dungeon. It's got a wild hand-drawn art style, or maybe drawn is the wrong word, but hand... pixeled. I don't know. It's very rough, sort of intentionally rough, this like wild, zany animation style that looks very, intentionally rough around the edges and kind of, almost amateurish looking, but in a stylized way. But Blood Dungeon is brilliant, man. It was one of those demos where I was like, oh, I was only going to play this for half an hour and the sun's going down. It is, by their own admission, it is Vampire Survivors meets Spelunky. So it's basically, what if Vampire Survivors was a platformer and you're doing Spelunky things where you're like, you know, dodging all these crazy enemies and bats and stuff flying at you as you're, you know, jumping and grabbing onto ladders and leaping onto platforms and finding keys that'll unlock doors to get you over here and getting, you know, treasure, and very Spelunky like, but all the while your character is auto attacking in the same way that Vampire Survivor and Survivor Likes do, all the things around them. And you're getting that Vampire Survivor like upgrade path that happens very, very frequently, where you're constantly getting new features to your weapon, new weapons, new kinds of things. You know, I'm getting a rocket launcher and I'm getting, you know, more damage, and I'm getting a thing that surrounds me. It's really fun. It's really wild. It's really fun. It's like a super fast paced, and it's just a brilliant combination of two things that work really well, working well together, which I've never seen, which is that, you know, that auto attacking, you know, super fast paced RPG ramp up power level, you know, going from 0 to 60 very, very quickly, like in Vampire Survival, but also all the fun decision making you're having of a Spelunky type platformer of, where am I going? How do I get over here? Oh my gosh, there's too many enemies over there. Oh, I want to go that way, but it requires a key. Where's the key? Got to find it. Like, you're doing both of those things at the same time as you're blasting all these enemies and collecting their experience points. Blood Dungeon, super, super fun. I would not let the sort of, I don't know what the word is, janky art style. it's kind of janky looking, but like intentionally so. I would not let that put you off of trying this game. It's really fun. All right. Couple of other ones I'll mention quickly. there is this thing that I have not experienced before that I found to be ridiculously compelling in a way that made me feel a little guilty, I think. It's like, this shouldn't be, like, is this, am I just wasting my time with this thing? And there's two different demos that were both basically doing the same thing. One is called Grass Chopper, and the other one is called Don't Stop the Pop. Both of them I played way more than I should have. And both of them basically just distill down a video game into, like, the most, I would say, simplistic elements that just give you dopamine. And so I was like, do I like this? Or is it just like tickling my lizard brain? It's kind of what
what's wrong with that?
I mean, I guess that's what I want, right? This is the same thing I talked about when I was mentioning, what is that game called? Solcesto. Did you, either of you play Solcesto?
I did not.
Oh, I love Solcesto. But it's the same thing when I played Solcesto, where it's like, I love this, but like, should I feel guilty liking this game? Because it's just the most like naked kind of, there's, you know, it's just loot boxes basically. Anyway, let me explain what these games are. Grass Chopper is a 2D side-scrolling pixel art game, I think very attractive looking, where on the right hand side of the screen is a bunch of very tall grass. What is in that grass? Well, I'm glad you asked, because you got to cut it down to find out. I'll tell you what's in that grass at the beginning. It's a bunch of seeds. Those seeds you collect, and you can go and someone will give you coins for those seeds. What do you do with those coins? Well, you make your little scythe, your little grass chopping scythe, cut down grass faster. Okay. All right. So you can go deeper into the grass. Well, guess what? There's a catch. The farther you go into the grass, the more suffocating the grass is. So you literally are running out of oxygen the deeper you go into the grass. Well, I have good news. You can also buy better oxygen tanks and other upgrades. So it is, so literally what you are doing in Grass Chopper is you are walking to the right, holding down a button to make your grass chopping chopper chop, watching it chop, shunk, 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 shunk. Delicious things are popping off of it, little seeds that you can sell. Sometimes something even more special than a seed. Ooh, a feather. That's even more valuable, or some kind of bead or something that was lost in this grass. It pops out in very, very satisfying ways. Like there's just an explosion. And then you walk over to the little hut where the guy wants to buy the things you found in the grass. And when he buys it, oh my God, the money explodes off of you and you get to collect all the money. And then you go over and you buy your upgrade. It is the most simplistic loop. It's like, do thing to be able to do thing better.
Oh, Jeff, have you played a game about digging a hole?
I have not played that. Is that the same thing?
That is, you dig and then you spend the iron you collect to make your shovel stronger.
Yeah.
And then you can dig deeper and then you find gold and you bring it back. It's worth more and you make your shovel stronger and your jetpack. Yeah.
Grass Chopper. That is Grass Chopper.
There are so many games like that.
But I think
go ahead.
I think I know how Microsoft can save Xbox.
Yeah, right. No kidding. I have never played any of these particular games where it is like literally that simple.
Sure.
I played so much Grass Chopper because I kept going, because Anthony, I kept saying to myself, I said, what's deeper in the grass?
Oh, what's deeper in the hole?
Yeah.
About digging a hole. Jeff, have you ever played Cookie Clicker?
I mean, it is Cookie Clicker. It is Cookie Clicker. It's nothing masquerading as something. But if you think I couldn't get any less interesting than chopping grass, let me introduce you to Don't Stop the Pop, which
okay.
I also played a lot of. And that is literally a feel, the screen. It's not even a field. It's an abstraction. It's a screen of unpopped popcorn kernels. And you drag your little pan over the popcorn kernels and hold it there, and they pop. And you have a time limit. It's like you got 10 seconds, pop as many kernels as you can with your little pan. And I drag it over the popcorn kernel and I wait, and it pops. Oh, I did it. Oh, I did only got three in the 10 seconds it allowed me. Well, guess what? We're going to pay you for the popcorn kernels, and you can get a bigger pan. You can get a pan that pops them a little bit faster. You can get a pan that makes other kernels kind of drag toward that pan, so you can do multiple at a time. Oh, Don't Stop the Pop is literally the exact same thing. It's just like, do the thing that is like objectively not even challenging. It's not hard. You're literally just holding a cursor over a thing, but you can get better at holding that cursor over a thing because the cursor gets cooler. I played them and I'm not afraid to say I enjoyed them. That's Grass Chopper and Don't Stop the Pop, both of which I put way more time into than I need. And I felt guilty about it afterwards, guys. I felt guilty.
I feel you're like doing, next you're week you're going to be like, guys, work. Have you heard of Roblox? Have you?
No.
There's so many
cooking clickers. I'm sure there's lots of these games. This is the first time. Yeah, I know. It's just busy work, but.
I will say you should try a game about digging a hole because it is like that. It is a, but it is not a demo. It's a short game, yeah. but if you can get through that game and then feel like, okay, I want to do more of these, then you're in.
Then I'm a sicko. Is what you're saying.
I mean, yeah. I enjoy them too. I mean, I played Cookie Clicker. I had a whole Cookie Kingdom.
I didn't realize I was talking to the Cookie King.
I mean, at a certain point, you no longer clicking.
That's
you
right.
Know, I don't know.
It's a game where success means you get to do it less.
Yep. Isn't that true about life, though?
Yeah, I guess.
Life lessons.
I have this vision of Jeff locked in his office with the lights off, popping popcorn, and his wife is like knocking on the door. She's like, honey. He's like, don't. I'm popping my popcorn.
It literally is called Don't Stop the Pop. I can't stop the pop. Anyway. Oh, all right.
Not to be confused with Pop Star. Don't stop. Never stop.
That. Yeah. Never stop. Never stopping. Two more games I want to mention. Again, there was thousands that I could have mentioned. I spent minutes on Grass Chopper and Don't Stop the Pop. So I can't end there. Another game that I felt guilty about playing, but for a completely different reason, is Order of the Sinking Star. Not because the game was embarrassing, but at this point, I just don't know if I can support Jonathan Blow.
That's fair.
Do I love The Witness? It is, I think, in the pantheon of my favorite games. You know, if I had to come up with a list of my favorite games ever, I think The Witness would be on it somewhere. I also love Braid. So I do think he is a brilliant, brilliant game designer. He just seems kind of like not the greatest human right now, which is a bit of a bummer.
If it makes you feel any better, it does seem like other people made that game and he's just kind of like, I mean, that might also make you feel worse. But
yeah,
you feel like maybe you're not supporting his creative vision, you're supporting other people's. But yes, I 100% agree with you.
The bummer about The Order of the Sinking Star is that it's brilliant also. It's really good. And it's very similar to The Witness in that it takes something that you've played before, that everybody has played before, I think, pretty much everybody. Like from the most primitive times of video games. And it just does it really, really well and more. So in the same way The Witness is like, hey, have you ever traced your finger along a maze and tried to get from one end to the other? It's like, yeah, we're going to do that every possible way a human could do that and make a whole world out of that. It's like, oh, The Witness is genius. The same thing with Order of the Sinking Star, except it's pushing a block. I can't remember the name of the game. there's a name for that genre too, and I'm not thinking of that either. I don't have it in front of me, but there's a game that I played with my dad on his old PC when I was, I don't know, 8, and it was this primitive, like CGA graphics, like so primitive, but it was all that like push this block and you can, you know, you can block yourself into a corner, but you try to get, you know, you try to get yourself out of the maze, but you got to push these blocks and you can only push them one direction. And then if you push them into the corner, you're screwed because they're in the corner now and you can't get around the back of them to push them back out. That's what Order of the Sinking Star is, but it's also got this narrative, like a tons of voiceover and multiple characters and a gorgeous big, huge map of a world. And it's all this kind of top down pushing blocks from place to place. Some of the characters can only pull blocks. Some of the characters are stronger and can push multiple blocks. So there's like, it's constantly changing up this very basic formula. It's a puzzle game. It's just puzzles. It's just puzzle after puzzle after puzzle of the same type, but you know, variations on a theme in the same way that The Witness is. And I think it's genius. I cannot believe how good it is. I really like it, with the caveat that, you know, Jonathan Blow seems kind of like a jerk. But very cool game, Order of the Sinking Star. The last game I will mention before I get out of this segment is the last game I played that really blew me away. And I think this game is really, really cool. It's called Fury Ball Rogue Revenge. Fury Ball Rogue Revenge. Not a title that would get me to click on something usually. It seems a little goofy, but this game is genius. I really love this idea. It is a top-down action combat game in the style of something like Smash TV, you know, or like even older Berserk, if you remember Berserk, if you're old like me. I have to be old to remember Smash TV even. But it's got that same kind of like, you're in a room, you got to defeat all the enemies, then you can go to the next room type of thing like Smash TV has. Except what you're doing is you're basically inside a pinball machine. And you're running around and there's bad guys that are also inside the pinball machine. They want to kill you, like Smash TV style, but the only way to fight them is by knocking the like pinball into them, ricocheting it around the edges of the arena, knocking it into the pinball style other objects in the room, like the bumpers and the, I don't even know the names of pinball things, but you know those like the things that, the little knobbin things that stick up and go when you hit them, there's those in the room. And you have, but you're like a little character. You're running around. There's other little bad guy characters. It's got this sort of post-apocalyptic, like, can't speak, post-apocalyptic Mad Max aesthetic going on. And it's like a, you know, it's like post-apocalyptic sport is Fury Ball. But you have like a, you know, a bat, basically like a lightsaber type bat that lets you smack the pinball as it comes ricocheting toward you. You can do a charged attack that'll kind of slow down time for a second and smack it that way. And when the enemies smack it, it changes color and it can damage you. But when you smack it, it's your color and will damage them and won't damage you. But it's bouncing all around in there. It's got this very satisfying feel to it where you're kind of playing like Breakout, you know, again, another ancient game I'm referencing, but almost like Breakout where you got to like get in the way of the ball and hit it in the right angle to kind of get the bad guys. But feels like a combat game and feels like this very fun physics simulator inside this cool thing and has these, you know, very fun pinball elements where it'll like get on a track and go zooming around in a circle or hit, you know, flippers that are knocking it in different ways. But you are doing the combat like inside of that. So you're still dodging bad guys that are charging at you and trying to hit you or shooting bullets at you. So you're doing all these different things at once inside this really cool arena and then powering up after each one. So it's got, you know, that roguelite thing too, because it says Rogue Revenge as part of the title. It's got that roguelite thing where you're powering up and you're getting to, you know, different builds each run. I had a blast with Fury Ball Rogue Revenge.
So clever.
Those are my picks. Those are my Steam Next Fest picks. Believe me, I played way more games than that. But those are the ones that stood out to me and made my list for this Steam Next Fest, made my wish list. So hopefully that'll help some other folks try out some stuff and get excited for these cool indie games that are coming out relatively soon. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Adam Leonard, thank you for being here. Always a blast talking to you, having you on the show. And what better day than Father's Day to talk to the mega dad himself.
Appreciate you guys having me on. It was a blast as always.
Tell folks so they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do online.
Yeah, so I run Mega Dads. We are in our 12th year. You can find us at youtube.com/megadads. We have podcasts, daily videos. We've embraced the idea of fun, fully grown over at Mega Dads. It's all about what happens as you grow older, not losing sight of the things that bring you joy, and bringing your kids along for the ride as well. I do a lot of content with my kids.
It's awesome. Yeah, I love watching that stuff. It's great. You've been doing it a long time, and you're continuing to make it awesome. Kudos.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Anthony Taramina. Always great to talk to you as well. Missed you during Summer Games Fest, but I'm glad we could bring you on and chat it up. Thank you for being here, buddy.
Yeah, it was. I'm glad to be on. Yeah, I didn't do Summer Game Fest. Similar to Adam, I'm doing more content with my son. We went to Pokemon Go Fest. So
nice.
Yeah, I wrote about that, and yeah, GameRant.com. You can read my preview or watch some footage and hear me talk about Control Resonant. Little teaser, because I can say that I did play Blood of Dawnwalker. Can't say more than that. But soon at GameRant.com, you can read and see some of what I played of that game.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Thank you both for being here. Of course, you can follow me on socials at Jeff Cannata, and I have other podcasts to check out. The Filmcast, where we talk about movies and TV shows. I think we're talking Toy Story 5 this week. Toy Story 5, a big summer, big time to go to the movies. Keep up with all the stuff over at the Filmcast. Also, We Have Concerns, the comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni, the other Anthony in my life. The new episode just came out yesterday, I think. So check that out at wehaveconcerns.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Adam, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yes, I do. Every once in a while, my kids leave the house and I can watch a grown-up movie. And I did so. New on Hulu, I watched Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, which I think is appropriate for some of the raging I was doing against AI earlier. This movie is weird. This movie is a giant middle finger to kind of the way that technology, the bad effects of technology in our lives. There are some scenes in this movie that had me laughing and feeling much like you did with your games there, feeling really uncomfortable about the things that I was laughing at. But this was a wild, wild film. Sam Rockwell does such a great job in his role as a time traveling nut job, I guess. It's a great time. I had so much fun with it. And it's one of those movies that I found myself just thinking about for the next day or two, just replaying scenes in my head, like, what did that really mean? And what was I supposed to take from that? Good time. Good luck. Have fun. Don't Die on Hulu.
I really love that movie too. I had a blast with that one. I totally support that suggestion. Anthony Taramina, what is your parting gift?
Well, since I was a kid, have been playing soccer or football, if you are international. And the World Cup is going on. So I got to give a shout out to the World Cup. Team USA is advancing out of the group stage, probably going to get a favorable bracket. So I'm super excited for it. I know some people are like, oh, they don't score goals. Once you get out of the group stage, it's do or die. So tune in and see some of like the greatest athletes around play what I think is the greatest sport around.
Yeah, super fun. Super fun to have it be hosted in the States and like see the excitement. Yeah. And it just, it's
and not have to get up at 3 a.m. to watch games. It's so nice.
That's helpful too. That's helpful. Makes it fun. Yeah. Very cool. My parting gift is a new comedy special from one of my favorite stand-up comics, Patton Oswalt, who you may know is the voice of Ratatouille, but is also an awesome stand-up comic. Very funny. His new special is called Tea and Scotch. And it's available on YouTube. I watched it last night and I thought it was hilarious. He does some really great bits about cell phones and just very smart stuff, very funny stuff. Very cool. He's great. So check it out if you like comedy, Patton Oswalt's Tea and Scotch. All right. We'd also got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Ray. Ray says, I know this one is a long shot, but after hearing Jeff's review of The Christophers, that's a movie I really liked too, I really wanted to recommend this movie. The title is Gold or Shit. And it's an absolute hidden gem. In fact, it's so hidden that I'm not sure if there's an easy way to watch it in the U.S. outside of piracy. I only had the opportunity to watch it because I was on a plane to China. All I'll say is it's another movie that makes you appreciate the value of art and creativity. On IMDb, it's called G for Gap, which is an absolutely terrible title. Perhaps that was to make it more palatable internationally, but in my heart, it's still Gold or Shit. I understand if you don't think it's worth the trouble of seeking out, but I think it's something Jeff would really adore. G for Gap. I love me some video games, and I always look forward to DLC each week. Thank you for making things a little brighter during these tough times. Ray. Thank you, Ray. I don't know if I'll be able to watch this, but I am intrigued by both the titles, frankly. And I always love when a movie is about art and creativity. So check out G for Gap or Gold or Shit, wherever you can find them. Hey, if you'd like to have your parting gift on our show, send it to us. We'd love to hear it. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Adam Leonard and Anthony Taormina for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get merch for our show by heading to our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons who make this show possible. We would not be here without the patrons. If you are listening and you're not a patron and you got a little value out of what we've talked about, maybe you want to give us a little value in return. We'd be very grateful if you headed over to patreon.com/dlcpod and checked out the cool perks you can get in return. All right, we'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.